we tell you we're reaching out to the disenfranchised community? How about the priests? Do they get disenfranchised? What do the priests need? What is there to learn? How about liberation? This is Father Voskin. I'm connecting the dots with you and ready to give you the 411 in this 411th episode of The Next Step.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, how are you doing today? I hope you're doing well. I just found a book on my shelf called Prayers for Priests. Now, this book was given to me by a dear friend, Father Tatius, many years ago. Too many that I want to recall. And I guess in the transition when we moved from one office to another, it got put on a shelf. I remember reading it back then, many years ago. And I'd see it every so often. But look at the title, Prayers for Priests. I started thinking that it was prayers that people would pray for priests. Ah, yes, that could work, right? Like, the priest is the object of the prayer. So, we got communities. These are prayers that are for priests. Maybe that was wishful thinking in my head. Then people would pray for us as priests. Yes. Then, on another occasion, I remember looking at it and seeing prayers for priests as... these were the prayers that priests would have, like sort of a manual in Armenian, the mashtots. You know, these were the prayers that priests would use, prayers for priests. And I had forgotten about it when I first got it. It's been maybe about 15, 20 years ago that he gave it to me, that these were prayers for priests. In other words, priests, their prayers. And so yesterday, as I was going through some books preparing for our Questions in Faith series last night, I find this book, and I opened it up. Yes, you should do that with books, right? I opened it up. Beautiful, beautiful prayers. And it reminded me how important it is not only for everyone to pray, but especially for priests to pray for themselves, for their ministry, for their people. And it's a beautiful book. It's a small little book. And in fact, I went online looking to see if it was still in print, and it's not. So I'm very fortunate that I have this copy. So I start off this show with this little confession of mine that, yeah, I've forgotten what this book was about and how important it was, because the priest needs to pray too, because here's where we're at today, and that's what I'm going to share with you today. Disenfranchised priests. We talk about the disenfranchised members. How about the priests? Yeah, they need prayers, and they get disenfranchised as well. Let me give you some background, okay? You know, we talk about what the next step is, how we started off. I mean, we're going to go into our ninth year. Can you believe that? We're finishing up our eighth year of broadcasting in a couple months, in less than a couple months. We're going to be celebrating, I guess. Celebrating. I will celebrate. I always do. We will be celebrating, but we will be starting our ninth year of podcasting. And I was hearing Leah Laporte the other day, and he said that we should refer to these as internet broadcasts, that he has never really liked the name podcasting, because it kind of like pigeonholes you. It puts you into a special category. He said, call it internet broadcasting. And rightly so, you know. I mean, and when we think about internet broadcasting, at least for me, because it wasn't, podcast to me gets into the category of it's a regularly scheduled show, and you know that every Thursday this comes out. But our first internet broadcast was back in the year 2000, long before podcast was even a word. It had a definable definition, had some words behind it. Yes, in the year 2000, on Easter Sunday, we broadcast the Divine Liturgy over the internet. And this was a very, very special feat for us. And there had been a couple live broadcasts like that. We were one of the first ones, and it was an Armenian Divine Liturgy. And you know what? That has been archived, and it's sitting on my hard drives somewhere. And I always want to say, I need to put it up online. Now, in what format do I put it up online? I don't know. I guess the original MP3 file. I can't even remember if it was an MP3 file that we archived it to. Anyway, it's sitting around, and one day I'll get to it, and we'll put it up. It's basically the Divine Liturgy, but more importantly, historically, it was the first time the Divine Liturgy was broadcast via the internet. And this has been really one of the problems that we've had in this ministry, is that we've been way ahead of the game. And I mean, I'm talking in sincere to you, my listeners, that this is really a problem, because when you get ahead of the game, you don't have the people that are around that are able to support it. You're basically an anomaly. You're out there, okay? And people don't know where to put you in the what category, okay? So it's difficult to get the support. Now, thank you, you Next Steppers. I know you're on board. You've been on board. But, you know, for the sizable capital that you need to get these things off the ground, to shoot them up, and you're going to hear in a couple moments, you're going to hear, you know, what could have been done. But remember last week in our podcast, what did we talk about? About being the props in the play. I told you about how the priests, they get into the moment and they get stood up there. Well, guess what? Last Saturday, I was invited to be part of the entourage over at the Brand Library in Glendale. Now, this is a beautiful library if you ever gone over there. They've even got a woman on the crucifixion of a woman over there. The Brand Library, yeah, that's an insight. If you go there, you'll see exactly what I mean. Anyway, it's one of my favorite libraries, hangouts. And they have these little exhibits that go on all the time. So this beautiful exhibition that came in from Mexico City is now at the Brand Library, and it is called Armenia, an Open Wound. Yeah, I know. You're surprised that I would show up at something like that. Okay, anyway, we're back to the open wound things. Anyway, I'm invited to go to this open wound exhibit with our archbishop to accompany him in the entourage. What did we talk about last Thursday on this podcast? About the props in the play. And that's what we were. Here's the opening. We are the props over there. The city officials get up. They make their speeches. They hand the archbishops the big giant ceremonial scissors. There is a ribbon across the place. Everybody looks good. They say, stand over there. And they push you, because if you're a priest, you're wearing the black, you've got the collar on, and people take your picture, and then they cut the ribbon, the props in the play. And then they come up to you, and they look at you, and they smile at you. You're Father Voskin, aren't you? Yes, I am. Ortnyader. Now, you know, that's like the greeting for the priest. So they look at you, and they laugh. Did I get it right? And you just go, whoa, is this like 2016? Is this like normal people? Is this what we're dealing with? And this is basically the category that they pigeonhole you into, okay? Here, you're just the dumb priest. You're the prop in the play. Go and stand over there. Don't rock the boat. And let us greet you. Let us say, Ortnyader, so we feel good. And then going up to the Sirpazan and saying, Asvads Oknagan, Sirpazan. May God be your helper, Sir Paz. And they don't know what it means, of course. They know that that is the official greeting. Actually, unfortunately, because there's nobody out there to tell them besides these kind of podcasts, that's the greeting that was given in monasteries. That's a monastic greeting. May God be your helper. That's a monastic greeting. It's not up to people to go up, but we've made it very popular that somehow the celibate clergy, because they don't get married, you go and you tell them, may God be your helper. Swats oknagan to the celibates. And you dare not say that to the married clergy, because God better not be your helper, but you say, bless me, Father. Bizarre, 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 bizarre. If you're in the Armenian church, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're on the outside, well, doesn't matter. You know that there's some kind of ritual that goes on that has no meaning. And if you are in the Armenian church, but on the outside, you are part of the disenfranchised. That's what we talk about all the time. In fact, we started these podcasts 9 years ago with the idea that we would help the people. We targeted the disenfranchised groups. And today what I'm saying is it's possible for the priests to be disenfranchised. That's wild, isn't it? Think about that for a moment. We've got priests that are walking around that are disenfranchised from the church. And that is really wild. You say, how can that be? Well, think about it. What is that disenfranchised? You're disillusioned. They're disillusioned with what they came into. You go into the seminary, you take all that training, you go through all that training, you think that you're going to be out there on the battlefield, you're going to be on the front line helping people. And instead, it's like, well, let's go and decide what the tickets should cost. And I keep meeting these priests over and over. It's very sad. And so that disillusionment translates into disenfranchisement. Okay, you're disenfranchised from the body. You go through the motions. You are the prop in the play. You stand in that as that prop in the play. Think about this for a moment, okay? How we're ahead of the game, what we did and everything. Think about this for a moment. Do you remember a few years ago, a priest talking to you about leveraging love? Think about that for a moment. Where are we today? Several years ago, I came up with this idea that we don't have the weapons, we don't have the tools, we don't have the military strategy. What we do have is we have Christ's love. Now, in and of itself, if you just say, well, I love you and everything, you know, that's beautiful. But Christ is telling us that we can move mountains with that love. How do we do that? Well, think about physics, basic physics. It's called leveraging. It's this huge amount of weight that you need to move with a small amount of force. Armenian Orthodoxy, Armenian Orthodox Christianity, very, very, very small group of people. But we can effectuate big change if we can leverage what we do have. And what we do have is love. And do you remember? I came out. You don't need to remember. It's been in the last 9 years of these podcasts, 8 years of these podcasts. Before that, guess what? You're going to see in the second portion of today's show. It was way before that. Way before that, we've been talking about leveraging that one bit of strength that we do have, and that's namely love. And I shared with you, I said, let's go out there. Let's go out there and help the people. And people said, wait, let's go help the Armenians. Wait a minute, Armenians are okay right now, but we've got a war in Africa. We've got a genocide going on in Darfur. Let's put our attention over there. Let's use our resources, small as they are, but let's be that loving community, that caring community that's out there. Do you remember in Indonesia, we had those hurricanes, we had those earthquakes? Who was the first responder from the Armenian community, if not the In His Shoes ministry? We were the same In His Shoes that was out there in Darfur, in the refugee camps in Chad. And I was hoping that as an Armenian community, we would wake up and see that we are not the only people in the world who has tragedy hitting them. Well, That was several years ago, and I've been a broken record. Sometimes I talk about it ad nauseum. I don't know how you put up with me, but I do talk about that ad nauseum. Well, guess what? A few weeks ago, there was attacks upon innocent Armenian people right on the border of Artsakh. The Azeris, the Turks, came in and they started attacking the innocent people who were just sitting there on their own homeland. And now we're scrambling around the world, asking this politician, that politician. Guess what I heard at last week's this is a true story. I heard last week in Glendale, one of the local politicians, one of the assembly members, whose district is basically a few blocks or something, she said, as long as I am the assemblyman, these crimes of genocide will not happen. I'm going, what are you talking about? Since when do you, as a mayor, even as a governor, what genocide crimes are you guys talking about? But they make everybody feel good. And guess what? We sit there and we applaud them. We say, thank you, you wonderful politicians. Thank you very, very much for acknowledging us. Thank you for acknowledging that we have a heartbeat. Yeah. Well, guess what? Several years later, after that priest talked about leveraging love, here we are at the same place. We have a national tragedy. We have people coming and hitting upon Armenians, and we need the help of others. Do you realize if we had leveraged love, today we could stand up and we could say, we need help. And you know what people would say? Hey, aren't you those Armenians, those people that help the people in Darfur? Aren't you those Armenians that are out there on the Syrian line helping those refugees over there? Hey, aren't you those Armenians that were out there in Indonesia when that hurricane hit? Weren't you in Ecuador when that earthquake hit? And weren't you helping the people, providing supplies? But instead, we have kept ourselves inside of our own pitiful little ghetto. And we sit around and we say, yeah, Armenians, we are great. In fact, in Glendale, there's a new little trend going around. A few years ago, it was on any car. Now it's on very high-end cars. Okay, cars that are in, you know, toward the 100,000 mark. Okay, Lexus, Mercedes. You put an Armenian flag on it and you race through the city going through red lights and everything, and this is supposed to make you feel like you are a good Armenian. It's true. You don't believe me. I know you don't believe me because you were in other towns. You can't believe, but this is true. And I know it's important. It's important because it connects to identity issues. But can't we come up with some better identity issues? I have, and I put it out on the line in issues, leveraging love. And I still stand behind it. I think that if we can do anything today as Armenians is to exploit the one resource that we have, and that's within the Armenian Orthodox faith. It's the element of love. It is the one thing that you find throughout Armenia in all of those very, very old historic monuments, quote unquote, that they call. Those are basically Christian centers where the energy, where these were vortexes, where if you go there, you actually feel the energy that pulls you in, and it's the energy of love. It is a unifying energy that connects you with the universe. It's fantastic. You may not understand it until you actually go there and you feel it. But when you do, you know that you are not imagining that. You are connected. And I think we have that power. Unfortunately, we're not exploiting it. We need to exploit it because a lot of things you can exploit, and that's, I know that's a negative word, but when you exploit love, that is not negative. That's positive. We need to exploit love, more and more of it, if you want peace in the world. I'm going to come back with some other thoughts that are way before the times, okay? Right now, we're going to take a break. Relatively new album from Zulal came out end of last year. It is called Seven Springs. Enjoy this song. That was Zulal off of their album called Seven Springs, came out late last year. If you ever get a chance to see this group in concert, do that as well, okay? As much as you enjoy the music, see this group in concert. It's a wild experience. Had a chance to see them, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, here in Southern California, wherever they may be, do check them out. I will have a link on today's show notes so you can check out not only this album, but all of their wonderful music. And as I always say, let's support these people. Support the musicians, support the artists that are among us, and be that hand that applauds them. Did Did you happen to notice that today's show is number 411, 411th episode of The Next Step? It also is the number 411, which is popularly used to refer to information. Information, please. Now, some of us old codgers know what that's all about, but let me explain, because I think it's kind of fascinating, too. It kind of plays into everything that we're talking about, too. 411, it comes to us from the Stone Ages, when we used to have telephones that were connected to a central bank called the telephone company. Now, this predates all the means of communications that we have right now. Of course, we can communicate not only by texting, by email, by Facebook messengering. We can connect by voice and by video. We can look at each other as we talk through Skype and now, of course, through Facebook and an assortment of different places. Viber has its own protocols, and you could just basically connect into anything. I remember as a kid, we were talking about there would be a day where there would be video phones. And of course, the common thing was like, what would be that experience be like? And there was all kinds of little cartoons that were made about it, where there was like a TV, and you'd be looking at the person, and we said, wow, can that ever happen? Well, it's happened with a blink of an eye without us even thinking about it. But back in the old Stone Ages, this telephone company that would be running your telephone would offer you services. Today, basically, I can call anyone in the world free of charge. Well, yeah, you're paying for the internet overall, but I mean, you could basically get connected anywhere. And this is wild. If you think about how prices are going up, technology is the one place that prices are going down, and certainly phone calls. Think about what phone calls used to cost. Remember the services that they had. They had like long distance. They had international dialing. Right now, here in America, with a basic cell phone package, you can call any number within the United States, and I believe also in Canada, for basically the cost of the phone and the basic service that you have. There's no added fee to it. International calling, yes, there are the added fees, but the workaround, of course, is do a voiceover. You go on the internet and you get on and you could talk to anybody. I mean, we do this all the time, right? Now, back in the old days, the phone company, which had control over this and was making a sizable profit on these phones, also offered this service called information. And for basically the trouble your finger would go through, not only to punch, but to dial that 411, you would get all kinds of information. Like, in other words, you can call the 411 and ask for so-and-so's phone number, Mr. Torosian's phone number. And afterwards, you could say, and by the way, do you have an address for this person? And the person would say, sure you do. Not only within your town, you can call the 411 in any town. And basically by picking up the area code, and this was a wild way of living. You had information at your fingertips. This is, of course, before we had Google and Yahoo. Before Google, there was Yahoo. It was a big way of searching out information. And before Yahoo, of course, different ways. But because we had all of this, the phone company said, okay, there's going to be a premium. I don't even know if 411 is still on the phones. It might be. Somebody, I don't know. Yeah, I know. We haven't tried it in several years. But they may add a premium cost to it. But yeah, it used to be the way of providing information. So, in honor of our show's number, 411, and in honor of information, let me give you some information today about about something very, very dear to my heart. And this came about actually last night. I was going to take this in a different direction, but last night as I was preparing for Questions in Faith, our weekly Bible study, my wife was reading one of our old window magazines, and she said, do you remember what you wrote back in this issue? And I was on my way out, and I said, where is it? And she showed me the cover, And I said, okay, when I get to the office, I'll look at it. And I got to the office and I found that issue. I opened up that issue online and I started reading it. I go, whoa, this is the material I need to share with Next Steppers. I called my wife up. I called Susan. I said, thank you. Thank you for sharing this. And it turned out that what she had showed me was a different article, which had even more ramifications, had even more meaning in a broader sense. And I want to share that one, too. It's about denialism. And I think we're going to go into it next week. I want to share this because it happens to be April 24th today, this weekend, excuse me. And that, of course, is the day that we commemorate the Armenian Genocide. 1.5 million people were martyred. And those martyrs last year were elevated to the status of saint. And the sainthood changed things. In other words, we are no longer victims, but are victors in Christ. Now, that mindset is going to be tested this Sunday. And in that sense, I mean, like, what's going to happen when people go to the churches and realize that requiem service is not being offered for the people who passed away in 1915, for the victims of the genocide? Because you can't have a requiem service for the saints. In fact, I did the last requiem service at St. Leon's Cathedral last year. And I remember what an honor it was for me because the primate had asked me to celebrate the Divine Liturgy there, and it happened to be the last requiem service that was ever done for the victims of 1915. And I have a very moving, touching sermon from that day, which we'll make sure that it's on today's show notes. We'll get it out to you. And if it's not, it will be shortly because we're having some issues with our servers that handle the sermon section of our ministry. But that being said, this Sunday it's going to be tested. It's going to be tested. Can we move from victim mentality to victor mentality? And this is why I want to share this one little piece with you. It's called Rise, Take Up Your Pallet, and Walk. And I want to do a reading of it because it comes to us from the year 1990. Back then, it was right after the Armenian earthquake, a couple years. And when I say couple years, they were a couple long years after the earthquake, which, believe it or not, here 25 years later, there are still people that are living in small little what called domiks back in that devastated area because aid has not reached them because of bureaucracy, because of corruption, and there's 100 other reasons why, okay? And so, I'm talking about 26 years later. Still, there's people that are suffering from that. But what I'm going to share with you right now was written a couple years after the Armenian earthquake. It was in the aftermath of that. And then at the same time in Azerbaijan, and there was uprisings. There was the pogroms in Baku. Armenians were being massacred. Basically, genocide from 1915 was continuing there in Azerbaijan. In Artsakh, there was the Karabakh movement. We were up in arms about that. And church leaders rose, including Vazgen I, that the Catholicos of all Armenians became the father of us all, became the one unifying force during that time. Archbishop Barkev, Martirosyan, who happens to still be the primate of Artsakh, came into notoriety at that time, was known throughout the world, throughout the Armenian world especially, as this champion for the cause, champion in the sense that understanding that the cross and the might go together, that there is a might, there is a power inside the cross that is untapped. And so at the same time, 1990, we came out with this publication called Window. It had a life of 5 years. That was the original charter. We said we're going to do it for 5 years. And we did it. And this was the second issue of Window. It's called The Theology of Liberation. And I want to share it with you because this is what we need today, is this liberation. I can't think of a better message that I want to share with on the 101st anniversary of the Armenian Genocide than this. And so, my dear listeners, it's called Rise. Take up your pallet and walk. This is the editorial from that window. And I begin from the second paragraph. The first one is kind of a more of a preface. The reconstruction effort is only one part of Armenia's woes. Since February 1988, Armenians have been in a life-or-death struggle over the Artsakh, Nagorno-Karabakh dispute, with atrocities unparalleled since the 1915 genocide. Over 300 lives in the region have been lost. Once again, we see the diaspora heeding the call from the homeland, united in a voice of solidarity. It is evident that the events in Armenia are directly influencing and defining the diaspora. In turn, the Armenian Church also subscribes to a definition in relation to the turmoil in Armenia. For the Armenian Church, a new generation has arrived at her doorsteps, seeking the direction that allowed for the survival, endurance, and liberation of their forefathers. For the most part, however, that direction has come by way of caring for the physical needs of the people in Armenia. In the post-earthquake period, the church has been involved in fundraising and collecting supplies essential to the recovery effort. But so have all Armenian organizations. The church has not stood apart, but joins the United Rush to Aid as another Armenian organization. The earthquake rocked much more than Armenia. It had measurable casualties throughout the world. The psyche and soul of Armenia, which transcends geographic boundaries, which exists in the hearts of Armenian children throughout the world, has been shaken from its foundation. As the lamentation over our 1915 casualties was coming to an end, and we were beginning to enjoy a renewed vigor, proclaiming to be a resurrected people, we were thrown back into mourning. The impact of the earthquake shook the Armenian psyche back 75 years. No more are we heralding the good news of resurrection. Rather, we are once again singing the songs of lamentation. One day, when the buildings finish and all the mouths are fed, we may come to a rude awakening that we have survived, but we are far from living. Armenia, the country, will be reconstructed, but Armenia, the spirit, Armenia, the people, will need to be resurrected. Do you see why I'm reading this to you? It's exactly what we're going through right now. At some point, things are going to be fixed, but Armenia, that spirit, Armenia, the people, needs to be resurrected. Only the body of Christ has the power to heal and ultimately resurrect from the ruins of death. Unfortunately, in favor of being another Armenian organization, the church has placed her conquering and liberating message of hope and resurrection on a back burner. This action is seemingly justifiable. The tense political atmosphere and immediate physical needs of the homeland, coupled with talk of unity among Armenians, has excited the church in this direction, while the spiritual welfare of the people is dismissed as a secondary concern. As the living church, we must be alarmed that our brothers and sisters in Armenia, as well as in the diaspora, find their hope of salvation from the political realm. Political parties, with a renewed sense of nationalism, have become the new messengers of hope, while the church has been granted, let's call it today, what do we call it? The props, right? Has been granted a small jurisdiction within the caste of nations. In a morbid way, the church finds a comfortable niche in burying the dead. The offering of the Holy Communion, the life and hope of resurrection, has been overshadowed by the Requiem service in our parishes. The anthem of the Church, Christos Hariavi Merelots, Kovya Yerusalem, Praise be to Jerusalem, has been replaced by Iverin Yerusalem. The Eternal Jerusalem, which is the hymn of the Requiem service. This practice by the people, consciously, but mostly unconsciously, reflects upon the Armenian clergyman who is recognized as the shepherd of a dead flock. A dead flock of sheep who have been sacrificed. As such, the clergyman has lost his sense of usefulness. And the sheep who remain are fair game to secular trappings and unorthodox schools of thought, sometimes under religious guise, that capitalize on the shortcomings of the church. Remember we were talking about the disenfranchisement of the clergyman? There it is. 25 years ago we were writing about it. With this issue of Window, we begin our search for Armenian theology of liberation. We are not interested in reinventing the wheel. The message of the Armenian Church has always been liberating in all of its manifestations. This terminology addresses the relevant message that has spoken to the people throughout the centuries, that can and must speak to the people today in times of persecution and bondage, both physical and spiritual. We must acknowledge that the physical security of a people cannot be guaranteed without first waking the spirit. That's a big one. Do you believe in that? That's a big one. Only thus can the church be considered relevant and therefore alive for today's generation. By liberating the Armenian people spiritually, they gather the strength to be liberated physically. And in so doing, the church finds her liberation from the non-relevant to the relevant. There it is. There's your leveraging love. There are the seeds that were planted 25 years ago. We begin our quest for the Armenian theology of liberation with He who liberates, Jesus Christ. Our Lord began His earthly ministry with a simple yet poignant proclamation. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because He has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Luke chapter 4. With this quote from the prophet Isaiah, not only did Christ set the stage for His mission throughout Judea, but He aligned His holy body, the church, in the direction of social action with justice as a goal. The mission of the church is and always will be Christ's mission. We are hindered in actively joining Christ's crusade because all too often we find ourselves viewing Christianity as a religion disengaged from the ordinary. Our heroes, the saints, are removed from our lives by time and relevancy. We have placed our saints on such a high pedestal that they have lost their humanity. Furthermore, our perception of Christ is distorted by Hollywood images of fair-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, who, aside from turning the tables in the temple, refrained from displays of anger, advocated turning the other cheek, and promised eternal bliss as reward for suffering through social inequity. We live in a real world with real problems. We are overwhelmed with worry, debt, and disease. Yet in reality, we are flesh and bones. We live in a world that is cosmetic and stress-filled. We expect our wants to be immediately gratified. And so, we are reluctant to turn our problems over to the Christ for any real rectification. After all, afflictions such as poverty and disease do not warrant a pie-in-the-sky response, but are in need of real solutions. People have true afflictions for which the church must provide answers. Poverty, hunger, disease, captivity are all issues demanding an answer from above and therefore from the church, the mouth of God on earth. Indeed, we start off our daily liturgy with, Lord, thou open my lips and my mouth shall sing your praise. Psalm 51. Criticism about the efficacy of religion to bring about change is usually based on this false impression of Christ. Karl Marx argued that religion is mere illusion and therefore cannot solve man's problems. Christianity in particular, says Marx, preaches cowardice, self-contempt, abasement, submission, humility. In brief, all the characteristics of the canonical, the rabble, the mob. If we were to take Christ as defined by a Hollywood Jesus, then Marx's assessment has validity. But the church has recognized a Jesus that is part and parcel of our living reality, a Jesus who suffers and conquers with us. Our faith, as transmitted through our holy church, is something quite different from fiction. In fact, it is a faith that not only instructs us, but provides examples and demands us to follow and do likewise. Announcements by our Lord, such as, I have not come to bring peace on earth, but a sword, albeit out of context, nevertheless stirring, paints a different picture of the eternal pacifist and his message. Over the past few decades alone, we have witnessed the likes of Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Cesar Chavez grab that sword of Christ by adopting his principles to seek the liberation of their particular communities. More recently, we have seen church leadership actively involved in the struggle for freedom by offering support and hope, by turning concepts into action. Bishop Desmond Tutu has been outspoken against apartheid in South Africa. The Polish Roman Catholic Church is supporting Lech Walesa, and the Solidarity Movement provided intellectual leadership, spiritual succor, and sanctuary while the movement went underground. For more than a decade, the East German dissident movement was sheltered in the Lutheran Church in East Germany. Only last December, in Czechoslovakia, a dissident Roman Catholic priest, Father Vaclav Mali, rallied the opposition and crystallized the demand for a new government. And finally, the Roman Pontiff, John Paul II, held a meeting with communist leader Mikhail Gorbachev. And the list continues in Eastern Europe, in South America, in Central America, etc. Why not in Armenia? Why not for Armenians throughout the world? Maybe because the only thing that we can see is we are props in a play, right? But I digress. Black liberation theologian James Cone prefaces his work, A Theology of Black Liberation. Christianity is essentially a religion of liberation. The function of theology is that of analyzing the meaning of that liberation for an oppressed community so that they can know that their struggle for political, social, and economic justice is consistent with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Any message that is not related to the liberation of the poor in the society is not Christ's message. Any theology that is indifferent to the theme of liberation is not Christian theology. Christian theology is a theology of liberation. Cone's definitive avowal may leave much of Christendom searching for new nomenclature, but assuredly dismissed Marx's opiate of the people argument. Christ and Christianity provide movement toward liberation. We, the church, cannot proclaim to be the arms, the legs, the hands, the feet of Christ if we are stagnant and if we are merely another secular organization. Christ is unique, awake, and moving, and so must be his body. Our discussion need not be limited to large-scale concerns either. If the Spirit of the Lord is upon us, and if we, as the church, have been anointed to preach good news to the poor, then we must expand our perception of the captives, the blinds, and the oppressed. The object of our action cannot be confined by ethnic nor geographic boundaries. We must include ourselves in the list of these handicapped people of whom Christ speaks. We are the captives of materialism. We are the blind. We have eyes, yet we do not see the love of God. We are the oppressed. We are free by liberties guaranteed by our government, yet we are oppressed by the self-imposed shackles of pettiness and self-glory. We remedy global problems by first healing the self. The resurrection of the Armenian nation is contingent on the liberation of the Armenian soul from its ailments. I'm going to end it there because the rest refers to the rest of the issue. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes so you can check it out. But do you see why I get so wound up? Do you see my disenfranchisement? You're talking about a church that is real. And yet, within the Armenian Orthodox structure, your hierarchy is basically putting you, pigeonholing you into that prop for the play. Go stand there. Go and look good for the camera. Here's a giant scissor. Cut the ribbon. Here's a place for you to stand. And you know what? I know what to call you. I know to say Ortnia der to you. And to the other one to say Asvadzok Nagan. I know the rituals, but I have no idea what the ritual is supposed to mean. And we keep feeding our people this garbage. And what do you get? Well, think about it. Think about animals that eat garbage. What do you get at the end of the day? Now, I don't want this to seem like a judgment. I don't want this to seem like a condemnation. I care about it. And so rather than a condemnation, let's make it as a fact. And we know what's out there. And we know the fact of what we do have. We know the pearl that's with us. We know the gem that we have. It is called the expression of love through Jesus Christ. Why aren't we exploiting this? Why aren't we providing this to the people? And those priests that have been disenfranchised, and I know many of them listen to these podcasts. I know many of them are on board with us. Feel the strength. Feel the community. Feel the power of Christ that is with you. And to all of you who are not in that clergy category, I need you to be praying for the priest. Remember the book, Prayers for the Priest? This time I want you to make the priest the object of your prayers. Pray for the priest. And along those lines, bring your support. That's what we'll be talking about in a couple minutes, as I always do. But for right now, April 24th, this is the 101st anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. Don't waste your life by going out there and asking people to validate something that is real. You do not need anyone's validation. The Armenian Genocide happened, period. There's no comma after that. It's a period. The Armenian Genocide happened. 1.5 million people were slaughtered, were killed. People were exported, were exiled from their homeland. And the proof of that is you go into Turkey today and you see the remnants of a large Armenian community minus the Armenians. That's all. Plain simple. The proof is there. Don't ask people to validate that. Do something constructive with your life. Proclaim the love that God has put in your heart and proclaim it to others. Proclaim it as a child of that generation that lost their lives. Proclaim it as a true Armenian Christian. Proclaim it as a victor in Christ. And once we can start changing that emphasis, yeah, I know, we're ahead of the game. And people are going to catch up to this. Trust me, they're going to catch up to it. Actually, last year we saw small little glimmers that they're going to catch up. But you keep doing it. It is the straight mentality of putting your shoes in the shoes of others. putting your feet in the shoes of others and walking and feeling where they're going, where they are headed, and how you can help. It's an Armenian expression. It's called Savadanim. Let me understand your pain. Let me take your pain. And once we get into this mode, we understand that this power that Christ gives us of love can be leveraged to move the mountains, to do the impossible. And that's where we stand today. Let Susie make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple minutes.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
I know we went quite a bit today, and it's been a long one, but there was, you know, it gets to you. You know, when I say that the priests are disenfranchised, I'm feeling disenfranchised. You can't believe how therapeutic this next step has been. It's catharsis. It's being able to unload, but not unload in a dead world, but unload with some remarkable people. Those messages I get from you, those beautiful emails you send me, the words of encouragement when I go someplace and somebody stopping me and saying, thank you for doing that. You can't imagine how far that encouragement goes. Today, with this message that Susie makes, it's the encouragement that your financial gifts give to this ministry. We ask that you be generous in your giving. This is April 24th week. It's an opportunity for us to proclaim us as a living people, not as a dead people. It's an opportunity for us to proclaim victory, not victim mentality. Take advantage of this weekend. Wherever you go, whatever you do, remember the love of God is with you, and that is more powerful than all the evil that can be thrown out at you. That is an incredible and powerful testament that comes to us from an unfailing word from our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Believe in it. Believe in it because He has said. I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of the crew, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your podcast out.